What's up, y'all? Will here at Schedule Fly. What a great episode this is with Neil Benefield in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's the director of operations for Chef Brandon Sharp at Hawthorne and Wood and their newest restaurant, Bluebird. Neil told me afterwards that he had been nervous about doing this podcast, and you never would have known. Neil, you did fantastic, and this is a great conversation. I re-listened to it, got so much advice, so many good tips out of this. And one of the things you'll see or hear from Neil as you listen to this is just how much he loves this industry and how passionate he is about what they're doing and how passionate he is about his team. And folks that work for Neil and Chef Brandon Sharp are fortunate. You got somebody that cares very deeply about you and your success at work and in life. And I just thoroughly enjoyed talking to Neil and felt so inspired about what great hospitality people bring to their teams and to their customers and to their communities. So check out this great episode with Neil Benefield. And before we get to it, a quick word from our sponsor, Pop Menu. Pop Menu is a partner of ours at Schedulefly, and we're very happy to have them as a partner, and we're excited about what they're doing. We have a lot of mutual customers that are very happy as well with Pop Menu. Pop Menu is all about making your day easier and your sales bigger. They will simplify your marketing operations, bring in more guests, capture customer data for personalized remarketing to keep them coming back. With one super simple to use platform that integrates with most point of sales like Toast and Square and a number of others, Pop Menu starts with a beautifully designed, easy to update interactive menu that transforms the guest experience online. It includes a brand new website that's optimized for search engines like Google for no additional cost. Automated digital marketing, online ordering and wait listing, and you'll never miss another call with their AI answering solution that has answered over 1 million calls already and costs as little as 47 cents an hour. So much more in there. And I'll say that I have spoken personally to a lot of our mutual customers that use Schedulefly and Pop Menu, and all of them are very pleased and have seen great success and fantastic results. So check out the link in the bio or the show notes and for this episode, and enjoy this conversation with Neil Benefield. See ya. We are live, and I am here at Bluebird in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. What an amazing place. And Neil, thank you for taking the time to do this today.
Well, thanks for thinking of me and having me here.
So introduce yourself.
My name is Neil Benefield. I'm the director of operations for Bluebird and Hawthorne and Wood restaurants in Chapel Hill. Both are chef-owned by Chef Brandon Sharp. We opened Hawthorne in April of 2019 and thankfully survived the pandemic, or the beginnings of it, and were able to open Bluebird shortly after. We opened last year in July of 2022.
Two amazing places. I've been to Hawthorne. Brandon's been on the podcast. Just walked into this place for the first time today, and it kind of took me aback. This place is freaking awesome.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Neil, I'll start with the same thing I ask everybody, man, when I do these things. You got the hospitality bug somehow. You got bit by the hospitality bug. Where did it all start?
Well, it started in Pittsburgh. That's where I'm from. And when I was in high school, my parents just basically had the rule that if we wanted to have a driver's license, we had to have a job so that we could pay our own insurance. So being a 15, 16-year-old kid, there was very limited opportunity. And dishwashing at a local Mexican restaurant was the opportunity that I found, or that found me. And it didn't really take too long for it to catch a hold. I had a great mentor there in Sue Sabula. She started me off as a dishwasher and quickly taught me how to prep cook and had me on the line, had me bartending by the time I was 18. So it really was kind of a fast track to success in this industry. But I guess I could trace the roots a little bit further back. I grew up watching the TV show Cheers and idolized Sam Malone. And
heck yeah.
Even before I ever worked in a restaurant, kind of knew, like, you know, owning a bar or owning a restaurant would be what I ultimately wanted to do with my life. You know, growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a lot of disillusionment with the corporate world, being told as a kid that, you know, the average American will have to change careers 7 times, and you know, seeing corporate downsizing, take my father's job from him, and he ended up being a bartender too, like while I was a dishwasher at the other neighborhood restaurant. So it was kind of a fun camaraderie between him and I, both having a similar work environment, and, you know, our regulars would hang out at his bar and his staff would hang out at my bar. There's a lot of crossover there, and it really just kind of grew into something special that I loved, and it helped having a really great owner in Sue, and you know, good people around me. It just was more fun than I thought work could be.
That's really cool. Yeah, man, I used to watch Cheers too. It seems so awesome, like Sam hanging out there, and his you know, Norm and his stool, and Cliff and the regulars, and all the camaraderie they had. It was a great show. Has the restaurant life lived up to the dream of the what you saw and what you imagined in your head when you were young?
I actually think it's exceeded what I thought it could be. I know when I go back and revisit some of those episodes, there's a cringe factor to it. Not all of them really hold up too well. So. But you know, some of the common themes that show took on, like specifically the alcoholism that was rampant throughout, and a lot of the harassment. And I think those are some of the things that our restaurant culture now has moved, at least not beyond, but into a point of awareness about them, so that we're doing things better. And really creating cultures that people can feel safe and included and comfortable. And that's really what my career has become all about. And
I want to talk more about that. I was actually talking to my stepmom about this last night. You know, that's been such a big positive change in this industry, that it is starting to shift in the direction. There's been so much substance abuse in this industry. There's been, you know, for many years, it was sort of this work hard, play hard type thing. There was, you know, chefs back in the kitchen, you know, yelling at people. And it was, there were some tough parts of the industry. One of the things that's changed is that work hard, play hard was led to a lot of negative things, but there was also, I think from talking to other folks, there was a lot of camaraderie that kind of came with that, a lot of team bonding, and, you know, you're kind of going through the battle together or whatever. And it's a little bit, you know, you have to find that camaraderie in different ways now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, having decades of experience in this industry, I've definitely worked in some of the places that had a toxic culture, specifically a toxic kitchen environment. And, you know, sometimes even got pulled into being a part of that, or even being a leader in those environments. And you know, you look back on that and hope that you learn from it. But the one main thing that, or maybe the most defining thing that happened to me, was when I first met Chef Brandon Sharp at Hawthorne, when it was still under construction, and we talked about the kind of culture that we wanted to create in our restaurants, and well, specifically that restaurant. There weren't multiple restaurants at the time. And our first conversation was about what culture we would have. And ultimately, we wanted to amalgamate all of the best aspects of the restaurants that we had worked at throughout our careers and make them into the place that we've always wanted to work. And part of that was not having that toxicity, not having a culture of misogyny, and still being able to develop a team based on mutual respect and camaraderie. But like you said, having a different way to express that. And it isn't, you know, everybody going out to the bars at the end of every service and, you know, spending all the money that they made getting loaded and then coming in the next day and slogging through it together. It's holding ourselves to a higher standard. And that standard starts at the top. It really starts with him and trickles down to me and to the other leaders in our brand to make sure that we're, you know, taking care of each other, taking care of ourselves and taking care of our community.
Seems like there's a lot more focus nowadays on, you know, helping, like the types of benefits and things that y'all do for employees and checking on their mental health. And I mean, that's just that seems to be so much more part of the conversation now than it had been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you try to do what you can to have outlets and areas where they can help themselves, but ultimately I think it starts with just having the workplace be a safe place and knowing that that people can come in and be excited to be a part of something that's, you know, transcending just a business transaction and you know, starts to become an experience. And I don't know really where I'm going with this one, but yeah, just a culture of positivity, transparency, inclusion, where everybody feels like they're part of something. Everybody has a voice. And I'm not just talking about the guests coming in. I'm talking about the team members themselves to make them feel like they're part of something a little bit different than any place that they may have ever worked.
What do you look, I mean, it's so hard. It's been so hard the last couple of years. And I know it's getting a little easier maybe, but you know, just finding people that want to work in restaurants. I mean, a lot of people made life changes over COVID, and but then there's another generation growing up, and you know, maybe people are coming into it that had never worked. But what do you all look for? Like, what are the things that you're trying to find when you speak to people that come in here to interview?
First and foremost, a great attitude. I mean, I can teach people about food. I can teach people about wine, and steps of service are the same whether you're at, you know, a Chick-fil-A, a Sheetz, or the Plaza in New York City. That it's a service, But if you have a positive mental attitude and you're excited to go to work and excited to be a part of something, that's the first thing that I'm going to look for. Anything else I can train. And we're very picky about who we do hire. But we were also incredibly fortunate that, you know, throughout the lockdown period of the pandemic, like prior to the pandemic, we were already aggressively paying a living wage. We already had a culture of positivity. And when a lot of restaurants came, you know, under fire during that time, and a lot of team members didn't want to go back to their place of work, we were able to retain our entire staff, switching over to takeout at Hawthorne and Wood, and then, you know, slowly getting back into in-house dining. Anybody who wanted to work, anybody who felt comfortable enough to be part of the public and part of the restaurant was able to. We were able to bring the entire team back when the restaurants opened up. So we were ahead of the curve, you know, when the world started reopening, and we're fortunate for that and grateful for it. With Bluebird, our second restaurant, when we opened, again, we saw the challenge maybe even... Well, we saw it as even more of a struggle because people didn't know what Bluebird was. Hawthorne had become kind of a draw and people wanted to work there, but we didn't really market Bluebird and the job boards as Hawthorne's second restaurant. We really wanted it to be its own thing, and we were lucky to get a lot of great candidates and a lot of people who are right now currently buying into the system that we're trying to execute.
What is... Okay, so my daughter is, she's 18 years old, and she is actually this week she's taking a semester off of college, and she's looking to get a job in a restaurant. And I talked her into looking at independent restaurants. Mm-hmm. I have so much love for independent restaurants and what they bring to their communities. What advice would you give to somebody who is... looking for their first restaurant job, specifically about working for an independent?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think most of us who have long careers in the restaurant industry have worked in both. The thing that I would first say is that I 100% agree with you to look for an independent restaurant. There's something to be said for knowing that the person who signs your paychecks is working side by side right there with you, and you have a direct line of communication to the people at the top. Working for a corporation, like, maybe there is more long-term growth and opportunity, but you know, you're never really going to know whose pockets you're lining, you know, where the money's going.
Yep.
And I think that's important. One of our main leadership styles here at both restaurants, at both Bluebird and Hawthorne, is to have the leaders be side by side with the team members. They see us doing the hard jobs first, and they see us, you know, in the trenches with them. And I think that's inspiring to them. So for somebody who's new in the industry, I'd say, you know, first of all, talk to some of the people who work there and see what they say about the restaurant. If everybody has a good positive word or a message that seems to be, I don't know, the word positive just keeps coming into my head.
Yeah.
You know, if they're talking, saying good things about the restaurant when you're getting started or when you're doing a stash shift, then most likely the place is a good place to work. But if, you know, on day one or day two, the trainer's just shitting all over the place or telling you what they do or the way things are supposed to be done, but they really do it a different way. And you know, maybe talking bad about the managers or the owner, or saying that they don't even see the managers around, I think that's a big red flag.
That's a huge red flag.
That's where you want to say, this might not be the right place for me.
Well, you know, one of the things I've always found to be so meaningful about what you all do is that, as an independent restaurant, is, I mean, I walked in here, Brandon's sitting up there at the bar with the checkbook out, you know, paying paychecks or bills or whatever. I mean, the y'all spend so much energy in the communities that you serve. So your restaurants, you're here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. You're hiring people that live in Chapel Hill. The owner lives here in Chapel Hill. The money stays here. You invest back into the community. You focus on this community. And it just, it's a, you know, it's particularly in a lot of, you know, a lot of great communities, a lot of great cities and towns. You know, when you start peeling back the layers of like, well, why is that a cool place? Why is Chapel Hill a cool place? Well, obviously you've got UNC Chapel Hill here, but there's also the, you know, because there's a lot of cool independent restaurants there, like that, and that's true in any city you go to. Like, you start asking people, why do you like that place? You know, cool independent restaurants, it's always like, it's not going to be because, oh, well, we got a lot of Red Lobsters and Chili's around here. Like, it's like, man, we have all these like awesome places to hang out and good hospitality and good fun places, and that's such an important part of a great community. And I just, you know, it's just, I think it's an, and while yes, maybe you don't have, you know, like you said, like you go work for maybe a chain and you think that there's more room for growth. But the thing is, if you're going in and you're finding like what you were talking about, if you find a place that has a good culture, a good positive owner that leads by example, they're going to grow. I mean, Brandon, you know, y'all started Hawthorne and Wood, and then now here's the second one, and maybe there's a third one in a couple of years. And then, you know, and there's going to be, you know, for people that want to come in here and, you know, put themselves into something and work with love and passion, they'll have opportunities to grow, and there always will be. And you'll have opportunities to grow, and people that really buy into that, I think it's a wonderful career opportunity.
I agree 100%. And one of the things that I was proud to say, during the interview process prior to opening Bluebird, to almost all the candidates that came on board, at least for the service team, was, you know, if you do decide to join us and become a part of this, then no matter where you go in life, no matter where you end up, every time you come back to Chapel Hill, you'll be able to drive by Bluebird and say, hey, I was part of making that. I was part of making something great. And I think that the word community that you were using is so important, it's so strong, and we're fortunate to have a great one here. Prior to opening Hawthorne and Wood, when we really didn't know what the restaurant would become, you know, restaurants kind of take on a life of their own, and we can plan and design and strategize as much as we want, but inevitably the community is going to end up coming back and kind of helping you define what it is based on, you know, where the sales are going. What the restaurant becomes is, you know, contingent upon that. But Chef Sharp would continuously say, when people were asking him, you know, what do you want this restaurant to be, and he would say, I just want a place where everybody feels welcome and to make a restaurant that Chapel Hill can be proud of. We really wanted to craft Hawthorne to be a place where you'd feel comfortable, you know, after a round of golf, coming in shorts and a golf shirt, having a burger and a martini or a beer, or, you know, if you wanted to come before a theater event in a evening gown and tuxedo and have a 4-course dinner with a $300 bottle of wine. We had something for everybody there. We have something for everybody there. Bluebird being a little bit more precise was more of what the community needed. And we saw a gap here, specifically for a French bistro, and wanted to give, again, Chapel Hill something that they could get behind and be proud of. But community really was critical to us during the pandemic, especially because it was symbiotic. You know, we needed something to do. We needed a service to provide. And the community reached out to us in droves and helped keep us afloat with the takeout, with their generosity, not only in buying our product, but then with the tips so that our service team could continue to survive and pay their bills. So because of the wonderful Chapel Hill community and the people who have become loyal supporters and patrons of ours, we were, again, able to keep our entire team intact and then give the community something back in another restaurant.
Are you finding, has it become a little easier to find people to work now? I know for a long time it was just so hard, and you guys have a great culture. Maybe you didn't have to deal with it as much, but I mean, there was that period where so many people left the industry and then people weren't really coming back and people were having to offer like crazy amounts of pay. How is that now?
I would say, perhaps other than inflation, it's still the biggest challenge in running a restaurant and being successful. I mean, our staff retention is higher than I'd ever imagined it could possibly be, but finding those people who, you know, fit with what we're trying to do and can give us the schedule that we want to give them, it's a huge challenge still.
Front of the house, back of house, both?
Both. both for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did people, like, are people, what are they all doing? Like, where, I mean, is it DoorDash? Is it like, are people working for, did they go work in for, you know, Amazon? Or I'm just trying to figure out, like, where all these people went.
Certainly the gig economy became a huge thing during the heart of the pandemic. And yeah, I think a lot of people, took that time that they had off to get themselves, set up to get out of the restaurant industry. And I think a lot of that comes back to the scrutiny that restaurants were under during that time. You know, it was the heart of the Me Too movement, and restaurants were under fire. They still are because of a lot of the, you know, toxic traits that we already talked about. And I think so many people just assume that all restaurants are like that and don't realize that, you know, there's another way to do things that a lot of us have figured out, and or a lot of people are still figuring out. And that you can have a great time, you can make a really great living, or get yourself to the next step in your life without having to watch out for pots and pans being thrown at you or people dressing you down with curse words. Like, it doesn't always have to be like that. But I think so many people had already experienced that, that they were maybe not disillusioned by it, but just fed up with it and said to themselves when they had 3 months of collecting unemployment checks that I'm going to use this time to figure out something else in my life and go in another direction. And, you know, I don't begrudge them those decisions at all. That's great if it's working out for them. But, you know, for people who are still, you know, struggling to find work, there's great places out there like ours that, you know, you can really have a good time and be a part of something better.
Yeah, I think I've always felt like working in a restaurant, if you can, even if that's not what you want to do, like, I really want all my kids to work in restaurants. My daughter's 18. My son is 16. And my other son is 13. My 16-year-old son had a job last summer as a 15-year-old at Chick-fil-A, and I really, you know, we really wanted him to be there because I feel like that, you know, as a customer, I look at that service model. I'm like, you know, I mean, it's just light years ahead of, you know, anybody else in that fast food space. And I'd heard a lot of great things, you know, about the culture they created. But I feel like particularly. You know, when he gets older, you know, my daughter now, I feel like if you can work in an independent restaurant, you're going to know the owner of a business. You're going to be working for somebody who this is their pride, their joy. This is their baby. That's very, very different than working for some organization who you don't even know where the company headquarters is and whatever, and decisions are made and just, you know, whatever. I mean, you're literally working like this is their livelihood. This is their whole life they've poured into this. So I think that's an important thing to see.
Absolutely.
You know, what it's like to, you know, see the person who owns and runs the business. And then particularly but working in a restaurant in general, Neil, I feel like I have so much respect for what y'all do because I've always felt like if you can master dealing with the millions of things that go on every day in a restaurant, behind the scenes, with customers, all the daily challenges that y'all face, that to y'all are like, oh, the freezer went out. Okay, well, we'll do that. And I'm like, I would just panic. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you can get, like, when you're in a restaurant that's just hopping, right? A busy night and this, you know, just packed house, people waiting, you know, something goes awry in the kitchen and then things start. But if you can handle that and you can handle it well and you learn to master operating under that level of stress, and then you do it again the next night, and then you do it again the next night, you are going to learn to, like, these are life skills that are applicable in anything else you do. And most likely there's not going to be another profession other than, like, working in a freaking ER or something where there's, like, that much stuff coming at you on a daily basis that is just, like, really stressful, where you learn to just stay cool. And if you can do that, hey, dude, I tip my hat to you and Brandon and your team and all the people that do that. I think it's amazing. And as a business owner myself, like, I would – always look for people that have worked in restaurants because I feel like there's nothing that we're going to hand them that they can't handle. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Yeah. I agree with you that the skills that you learn in this environment are going to carry over to just about any profession. And no matter where you are in the restaurant, no matter which position you hold, they're all critical to the restaurant's success. And they all start with just, interpersonal communication and being able to think on your feet, adapt, react, and make the snap decision, make the right one on the fly. And maintaining a sense of positivity, like amidst the chaos, you know, like that turmoil and that panic can be going on inside of you, but you can't project that to the guest. It all has to look planned, contrived, controlled, and intentional. And if you do that, you're kind of creating an illusion, but what you really don't want is to have the guest feel affected by any of those things that can go wrong over the course of a night or week or month. And they always do. There's always something that's going to, make you want to snap, but then, you just keep moving and create a great experience for them. And at the end of the day, they're walking out the door, wondering when they can come back in and join you again for another great night. And that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Do you spend a lot of time? I know you're super busy. I mean, do you and or Brandon, do y'all go to a lot of other restaurants or?
I do for sure. That's my wife and my passion really is just travel and finding great places to dine. So yeah, for certainly. And I'm always looking around while I'm there trying to, pick up what I can pick up, learn something from the restaurant or, I've got a pretty critical eye too. So sometimes it drives my wife a little bit crazy when I'm just, not really seeing a standard being met that would be easy for a place to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. So you travel a lot?
We try to as much as we can. Yeah.
U.S. or overseas or both? Or
we've been going to the Caribbean a lot lately and trying to, scope out our escape.
I hear you, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What else, like, do you read, business books or restaurant books or listen to podcasts or,
all of the above? Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, have been, gifted a couple of great books, both from Chef Sharp and, a good friend of mine, Anthony, Danny Meyer, Setting the Table, Charlie Trotter's book, I believe it's called On Service, random cookbooks, just, from chefs that I admire. And then, podcasts for sure. Usually I tend to lean toward the true crime podcast, but there's
some
food and bev podcasts that I listen to as well. Like the NC Food and Bev podcast is a fantastic one.
NC Food and Bev. I've heard a lot of good things about that. I need to check that out. With Setting the Table, it is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
How many people, that's like the Bible for this industry.
It's actually expanded outside of this industry where I think a lot of leaders in other industries have seen that as a new model. I certainly learned a lot from it. Reading books like that, it's kind of interesting after being in this industry for so long. It's really just a reaffirmation, I feel, of what we're already doing.
Yeah.
And, I'm kind of putting it into a framework of maybe giving you another example of why we do it the way that we do it. And with his Enlightened Hospitality, which is the concept proposed throughout that book, I think that we've, even he has come out, with a little bit of a response, not against it, but maybe modifying it and correcting it a bit, where, although he's trying to make it feel so all about the guest and their experience, even if it's sacrificing the personal experience of the team member, I think that we've moved a little bit beyond that and realized that, making sure our team is our number one priority is going to ultimately make sure the guest has a great experience. And I think that's kind of where we're moving and hoping to maybe be trendsetters and recognizing that it's team first. And when you take care of your team first, then, your suppliers are going to be taken care of. And your guests are going to be taken care of, and ultimately your investors are going to be taken care of too, because everything will work the right way.
Take really good care of your people, and they're going to take care of the guests.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 That's amen, man. The guest, there was always, I guess like the guest is always right kind of mentality or whatever, but, how do y'all that's an interesting thing. Like, how do you deal with unruly guests or people that are making unreasonable demands or things where it's just like, that's not okay.
Yeah. It's tough. First of all, if there's a guest that's getting abusive, either emotionally, verbally, or physically with a team member, then they're out the door. That's number one, get them out of the space. And, cause having a safe place for my team to work is paramount. But most of the time when a guest is having an issue, really, let's say 70% of the time, they just want to be heard. And if you can just stand there and listen and connect with them and try to figure out exactly what is wrong, and do what you can to correct it without, you know, bending over completely for them, then you're going to go a lot farther than most people just by listening. And one thing that I will take directly from Danny Meyer that we preach here is to make them feel like you're doing something for them, not something to them. So whenever something is going wrong, it's not a hard wall or a no coming from me or one of my team members to tell them what we can't have them do, but providing alternatives. And most of the time when this happens, it's somebody makes a mistake with a reservation and they think that they had one, or one of their members of their party said they made it but didn't, and there's confusion about, you know, whether they booked on the wrong day. So it's figuring out how we can solve that problem as quickly as possible without, you know, pointing a finger or placing blame. So maybe we don't have this reservation for you now, but what I do have is a seat at the bar or a seat in my lounge, and if you're comfortable there, have an appetizer and a drink, we'll get you a table just as soon as we can. That's one very specific example, but that's the one that rears its head the most. If it's an issue with food or drink or anything else, you know, cost, I mean, those are easy conversations to be had. You replace the dish, you find out what's going on, and try not to sacrifice too much of your revenue stream by giving away too much for free. But really, I think for the most part, folks just want to be heard. And even if they're being unreasonable, if you can listen and smile and offer a kind word and try to end their experience on a positive note, you're going to go a lot farther than starting to get argumentative or abrasive back toward them.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like I would have a hard time. You have like one bad, you know, one unruly guest or something in a night. You have to remember that the other 200 guests that were there that night left happy.
Like, absolutely, yeah.
That's the important part. But you get this one bad experience, and then it's like, oh man. And then I'm curious, like, what's your philosophy? Like, do y'all pay attention to Yelp?
I try not to, but it's always brought to my attention when something bad's happening for us on Yelp. I try not to let myself be personally affected by negative reviews, even though that they're out there. And like you said, you know, there may be the one person a week, or hopefully one a month or a year, that have a really bad experience, but there's hundreds, if not thousands, more that are having a great experience. But you know, we can learn a lot from the negative experiences, and mm-hmm. if they're genuine and it's not just somebody having a really bad day or somebody who just makes a career out of shitting on restaurants, then we can learn from them. And we try to. We do take every piece of critical feedback very seriously, whether positive or negative.
Yeah.
And you learn more from the negative ones.
Yep.
A lot of them are just illegitimate. You know, you can go into Yelp after getting a 2-star review and click on their profile and see that every review they've ever written is a 1 or 2-star review. And at that point, it's like, all right, do we really consider what this person's saying? But the tough part is a lot of people in the community do consider what they're saying. And, you know, we may lose business over that just because somebody, you know, is jaded about a certain restaurant, and you never know where they're coming from. It could be their ex girlfriend or boyfriend worked there and they want to just make their life miserable. You just never really know. We pay attention to it. We try not to let it get us down too much and try to learn from it what we can.
I feel like, or I hope, less and less people consumers are paying attention to. I feel like it's just a cesspool. You know, it's just like, it's the small vocal minority. Like, most of the time, I mean, there are positive people that go on there and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but I don't really, like, when I go look for, I'm going to ask around or whatever. Like, I'd rather, you know, find out from people that I know or, you know, friends or whatever. Cause it just is, to me, it's not an authentic, you know, opportunity to find like a good place to dine. I just feel like there's so much just like, ugh, on there. So,
well, not to mention, you know, if you give them money, they boost your ratings and put you up at the top of the list. You're right about the word of mouth is the most important way to grow and to grow organically. And that's what we found at Hawthorne and Wood when we first opened. We did very, very limited marketing and very little advertising. And, you know, there were two fears when we finally opened the doors there. And my first fear was that nobody would show up. And my second fear that there would be 2,000 people out the door in line waiting to eat Chef Brandon Sharp's food. But we had the perfect scenario, like right in the middle, and a nice controlled chaos and slow organic growth and really grew through the community by word of mouth. And we're grateful for that. We really wanted to build the brand here at Bluebird the same way, even though we you know, we were already more known and established in this community, so we had more of a freight train load of business coming through from the get-go, and felt like being fired out of a cannon that really hadn't stopped or hasn't stopped. But yeah, you know, and going back to the unruly guests, a lot of the interactions that you can't solve end up with them saying, well, I'll never come back, and I'm going to tell all my friends to never come back. And those are the times that you really have to kind of shrug it off and realize, you know, if this person is that much of a jerk here, then anybody that they'd tell not to come to your restaurant is probably that much of a jerk too. Right. Or realize what a jerk they are and don't really respect their opinion anyway.
So yeah.
Every piece of negative criticism, you know, it gets to you. And, you know, especially if it's something that's happening like directly in front of you and not on an online review, it'll rattle you. And you just have to be patient with yourself and be patient with the person in front of you and see if it's solvable. And sometimes they're not. But when you can solve it and you do have an opportunity to take that negative and turn it into a positive, sometimes those are the best results and the things that make me happiest about this industry. And we have, fortunately, a few examples of from the early days of Hawthorne and Wood, people coming in and it not being exactly what they expected, and them writing to us and letting us know, and us being able to reach back out to those guests and figure out, you know, why, where did we go wrong, what can we do better, and invite them back in for another experience and turn them around. And I think two of our most loyal regulars are that model. You know, we got negative feedback, we took it seriously, we turned it around for them, and now they come in every week. So there's opportunity in even the negativity.
Everybody wants validation, wants to feel heard. You guys are really good at that. Those are examples of that right there. People, like you said, most of the time, they just want to feel heard. They just want to feel validated. They want to feel like somebody's paying attention and that it matters. And I mean, I've found that in our business, like, you know, just showing people you care, showing them respect, being responsive. It's almost like it's weird because the bar seems to be so low now these days that if you just do, I mean, that's like basic stuff, you know, like you and I would go, well, that's just like, you know, of course. Right. But so many businesses don't get that or don't get that right. And it's hard to fathom, but it's like, gosh, if you just pay attention to people, care about them, let them know you're listening to them, like basic things that you should do in a business, you can do really well and have a great reputation nowadays for having just, you know, great service or great hospitality. And, So in a weird way, it's like since the bar has been set so low, it just provides a great opportunity for businesses that really get that to thrive.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hope so, but I also hope more so that a lot of businesses start to learn from good businesses' example and start treating their people, you know, with the respect that everyone deserves. And going back to your family situation with your children, that you hope that they work in the restaurant industry. I mean, I hope that they don't find places that are toxic, but sometimes maybe it's good that you have an experience in one of those industries so that you know what to look out for and where you don't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, I know if my first restaurant experience hadn't been where it was at the Franklin Inn up in Pittsburgh with an incredible owner and mentor and chef in Susa Bula and her family being directly involved with that restaurant and everybody really just enjoying each other and enjoying their time there, you know, it could have gone the other way and maybe I'd be a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, in prison or something right now. Who knows? but I was lucky. I went to one of the good ones as my first restaurant. And then after that, I saw some really bad restaurants and places that, you know, I'd work a service or two and then be like, this is crazy. I can't believe that you're actually in business and operating this way. I'm not coming back. And it's good to have both perspectives so that you know that where you should be and the way that people should be treated. So for your children having an experience in the service industry, like, yeah, it's good for everybody to have at least a year working in retail or customer service or food service, just so you can learn how despicable people can be and how to overcome that. But then to also be able to take whatever soft skills you gained from that and apply them to whatever career you go to in the future. And you know, I think that's probably a little bit of what you're hoping to see as your children develop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me what you've learned. I want to ask you this. So you grew up in Pittsburgh. So how did you make your way here to the Carolinas?
Sure. So my brother went to UNC undergrad through doctorate. And when he moved down here as a freshman undergrad, I think that he really didn't ever want to go back up to Pittsburgh. He bought a house in Durham and then in 2008 when the market wasn't doing real well. I was ready for a move from Pittsburgh. He was ready to have me come down and join him. My parents had already moved to South Carolina, so it just made sense for me to come down. And at that point in my life, I was probably a little bit more transient. I saw myself maybe living with him for 6 months. That was 14 years ago.
Okay.
I've since bought the house from him and got married and have planted some deep roots here in North Carolina. I'll always be a Pittsburgher. I have a 412 tattoo. That's the area code there. But 14 years here in North Carolina. And I say y'all, but I don't drink the sweet tea.
Dude, that is freaking hilarious. Where did your parents move in South Carolina?
They moved to Litchfield when I was still in college, so south of Myrtle Beach, north of Charleston, a lovely little area. But they've since moved up here too, because now my brother's in Greensboro, and I'm very well entrenched here, so they decided to move to Briar Creek to be closer to us. So
okay.
The whole family's back here in North Carolina now.
So you spent some time down in Pawleys Island.
Yeah, that was actually their mailing address. So
yeah,
a lot of time there. I love the area, but
I love it.
I'm glad to have them closer, though. That's for sure.
I bet you are. That's great. Good for y'all. That's really cool to have your whole family around here like that.
Yeah.
Well, we've gotten to know Pennsylvania a little bit over the last year. My daughter's at Penn State. She's taking this semester off. But it's been an interesting. I wish you were closer. but I have to say, State College is a great town, and it's a great university, and she's been real happy there. So, but we're learning our way around your state. It's a beautiful state.
It is. I mean, there's really the two sides, Philly versus Pittsburgh, and then the whole middle of the state too. But we can all get behind Penn State. That's for sure. But,
yeah, I mean, that's right.
My wife's from the Philly area, so we've got a nice house divided, especially when it comes to hockey season. So, a
lot of good restaurants up in Philly.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones in Pittsburgh too. So when I was there running restaurants, it was kind of right at the beginning of the farm to table scene in Pittsburgh, which seemed to hit there earlier than it hit here.
Okay.
Weirdly, because there's more of a bountiful produce in North Carolina than there is in Pennsylvania. But I kind of got to see that evolution happen twice. First up north, as you know, the chefs from New York were kind of expanding out to Philly and Pittsburgh, and then down here. You know, kind of following along the vision that like Chef Ben Barker, Chef Scott Howell started, and Chef Ashley Christensen really started pioneering throughout this community, and seeing that develop and come to fruition. Where now, you know, farm to table is like, you know, the word cliche is a negative word in some sense, but it is a cliche. If you're not farm to table, you're not doing it right. So it's now the standard and the norm, and it's pretty cool to see.
What have you learned from Brandon over the years working with him?
So much. Wow. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Tell me about him. Just describe him to me. I mean, I've met him, I've talked to him, but I'd love to get your perspective on him.
Well, I think the most important thing that he's helped me with, and I always held myself to a high standard, but in knowing that I can continue to push myself and push myself to a higher standard, and it's that just watching the standard he holds himself to, and the focus and the precision, and knowing that I'm capable of trying to achieve that too. his leadership style, his business acumen, and just his culinary creativity and talent are beyond anything that I've ever experienced. And it's a great person to get to work side by side with. You know, I'm going back to the pandemic. Had I been at a corporation or been working somewhere where, you know, I didn't know who was signing my check, I probably would have been really comfortable to sit back and collect unemployment checks for a few months and maybe figure something else out. But knowing him and his wife and his children and what a lovely family they are, and seeing the possibility of something that they had dreamed to build for years and finally built in the town that they wanted to build with less than 1 year being open, starting to slip away, it wasn't a possibility to allow that to fail. And we dug in and we figured out what we needed to do to keep the business alive. And I wouldn't have done it for many people, but there was no question that I would do it with him. He's a great leader. He knows who and how hard he can push people. He knows what he can get out of people. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. Like he saw something in me, I think, that I didn't even realize in myself.
That's what great leaders do. They bring the best out of ourselves and show us that we're capable of more than we probably even thought of. That's amazing.
And his food's really freaking good too.
Yeah, I know his food is freaking awesome. Yes, it is. Dude, I really, really enjoy talking to you, and I really appreciate this time. I'm inspired, I'm educated, and I'm just really thrilled to, I know you're a busy guy, but I appreciate you sharing your time.
Well, of course, I'm grateful to be able to do this. I could sit down here and keep talking all day, but there's duty that calls. So.
Oh, I get it, man. I get it. Well, thank you for the time. Thank you all for the business. We appreciate you. And just thanks for always being available and, you know, just, I'm looking forward to, I was telling Brandon when I walked in, I got to get my wife up here. We got to come up here and eat next time I'm coming up to town. This place looks phenomenal.
So. We would love to have you make a weekend of it and come to both restaurants, please.
Yeah, there you go, man. I like it. I'm in. All right. I want to get another cup of that coffee.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. That's a wrap. Thank you all.